The following program is a special presentation from the Talking Information Center. Please enjoy the show.
Just about to begin our live broadcast from Thayer Academy in Braintree, bringing you the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra Masterworks After Hours Concert, and Tammy Lynch is about to introduce everybody and welcome everybody to the show.
Welcome everybody. As you can see, we've got a little bit of a different configuration to begin our concert tonight. We have our special guests from Braintree High School. Yay! And from the Thayer Orchestra, from the Thayer Music Program. And this is part of our reinvigorated Partner in Music Education Program. So we are so thankful that we have these students who can perform for you, and they have been working with Maestro Jin Kim, who is also the Scholar in Residence at Thayer for the Thayer Music Program. So we're very, very lucky. I am looking. There he is. Come this way. We want to say a big thank you to Chris McCabe of E-Commerce Chris for sponsoring our concert this evening. Hi, Chris. We also want to say a big thank you to South Shore Bank and the Boston Foundation's Free for All Endowment Fund, which allows us to provide complimentary tickets and discounted tickets to students and their families. So thank you so much. And if you would care to support our efforts to make sure that the next generation learns about orchestral music, please come see me. We would be happy for your support in all ways. We are also looking for new volunteers if you are interested in volunteering for the orchestra. There's a lot of fun things you can be doing. I didn't introduce myself. I'm Tammy Lynch, the executive director. Thank you. There will be a short pause after our guests play, but there will not be an intermission this evening. So plan appropriately. Now, thank you very much, Chris, and he's going to say a few words about his business and why he's sponsoring ASO.
Thanks, everybody, for coming tonight. I think this is my fifth or sixth year. I can never remember which. I have a feeling I've said that a couple of years in a row, of sponsoring. Proud sponsor of the arts here on the South Shore and the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra for all these years. And I'm glad I'm doing this year because I guess it's two or three years it's going to take to get through the Beethoven symphonies. So that locks me in for another couple of years, right? Good sign of my commitment. I used to work at Amazon, so as the years go by, a lot of people know more and more people who sell their own products on Amazon or maybe invest in a business that's Amazon-driven, Amazon-based, and my consultancy is helping people lift restrictions or get out of trouble if they have a problem with Amazon or with some of their competitors or even some of the people they sell to are complaining about their products and they have to up their game a little bit. So we do some coaching and some advising and consulting for Amazon sellers, and as the years go by, more and more people are selling more and more of their products on Amazon instead of on their own websites or in retail shelves, and we've all kind of heard how the evolution of e-commerce has gone in the direction of Amazon, so I won't bore you with that, but proud sponsor, and it's great to see this many people here tonight. So I'll do I hand it over to Jin, or how do I start? Hopefully I'm not in charge from this point. But you want me to come that way? Okay.
That was all staged, just so you know, yeah. I'm sure that was planned. Hello, everyone. So here I am.
For those of you who are joining us for the first time, my name is Jin Kim. I'm the music director of Atlantic Symphony Orchestra, and until about 5 minutes ago, I was in street clothes. So, anyway, we are delighted to offer this, I call it the very energized version of, and a very different alternate version of what we initially envisioned as our after-hours concert. We will be doing Beethoven First Symphony, but in addition to that, you get a treat of hearing two high school groups joined by our orchestra members as well. So first you're going to hear the Thayer Orchestra, and then the second you're going to be hearing for Braintree High School. However, there's going to be a method to this madness, so to speak. This is what they're going to be playing also. This is going to be a concert where I'm going to be talking and narrating a little bit more. So you'll get to kind of, I will explain about maybe the layout of the orchestra and how things seem to put together, and my role and, you know, what each of the sections do throughout the concert. So just stick with me. The goal is to not have intermission, but we're trying to get you guys out the door quickly. However, after the students play, and just so you know, the Thayer High School or the Thayer School Orchestra will be playing two short pieces to start the concert, followed by one piece with three separate movements from Braintree High School. And then after that, the students will leave the stage and take their seats in their respective sections here with you in the audience. And in so doing, I'm also going to be talking. Stage is going to get shifted, and all the orchestra members, the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra members will come to the fore, because right now everybody will be interspersed among students right now. And then we will do a little bit of a brief lecture with examples of Beethoven's First Symphony to kind of show you why it's such an amazing work, and why there are eight more, even glorious, more glorious work to be following. And then after that, we play through the First Symphony, and then that would be the end of the concert. So, without actually, before... I just have to do a little bit of a housekeeping here to make sure everybody's in the right places, because we have altogether, I think, about 40 plus students. So let me see. How are you guys looking? Okay, I know the concertmaster isn't here, so this is supposed to be vacant. So let's see. So we need to have one of you guys switch seats with one of the high school students. Second violins, raise your hands. Actually, can you go to that vacant chair over there? In the back? Okay. And then I need one of the brave second violinists to come up and sit right there. Who's going to be brave? Come on, not everyone at once. Okay, there you go. And then, let's see, anybody else? Now, how are we doing here? Okay. You must be the professional. let's see. And are we interspersed as well? Cellos, are we good? Okay, oboes, violas, yes. And basses. I thought we were going to have more basses, but I guess not. There you have it. So I will exit the stage.
Excuse me.
actually, I need you after the theater students finish, swap. So come this way. Yeah. Go back to your seat if you can. Thank you. And then same thing, all the Atlantic Symphony folks, if you can actually take, just go back one seat for the time being. Yeah. Yeah. And then have the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra person, can you come up here? Yeah. Just, actually, just take this seat for the time being. Can you come up
And this is John Shea coming to you from the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra live from their academy. They're just kind of rearranging the stage, and we'll get underway with the music in just a matter of moments.
Okay, so the first piece you're going to hear is by Handel. It's called Sarabande. It's a Spanish dance. Prior to the symphony became the like genre for serious composers to write. Anybody care to guess what used to be, even before these, you know, the Sarabande is part of what you call a suite, a French suite. But prior to that, the very first genre in the Western European music history, the first, like, the large piece, long piece that you had to write as a composer to make name for yourself. Any ideas what that genre might have been? And it was not a symphony. That's your hint. Think more singing. Think more Catholic. Mass. Yeah. Masses. So whether they're liturgical masses, meaning meant to be played during Mass, but as you know, Masses usually didn't have too much, you know, music. It was, everything was about the communion table itself. So, and the choir was even hidden up until Vatican II in 1950. So, you know, the Mass was the genre that the composers ended up writing. And those are the, that they, if they wanted to really make name for themselves. After the Masses, then came about this also in France, they had what they call, you know, French court music, which was very highly sophisticated and extremely, you know, high level playing, because French aristocrats really enjoyed great music, in addition to opera and everything else. And so from there came this French suite, made up of all these dances, including the Sarabande, and probably the, one of the most famous ones called the Minuet. That also comes from there as well. So composers also wrote solo pieces and orchestral pieces on this. Sarabande is a Spanish dance in three, and that's what we're going to open the concert with today. So this is Sarabande by Handel.
Thank you. Sarabande is in dance in three, and if you can just play the beginning one more time. What? So it's very stately, and there isn't any like ornamentation, if you don't call it the meaning, like extra notes. It's just very straightforward dance, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, right? Now this piece, there are two what we call variations.
So you play the theme, and then the first variation, you basically take that melody or that theme, and then make something different to color it up a little bit. And then second variation is taking yet another approach to that theme. So this is once again the beginning of the Sarabande. And then the first variation, and it's going to be softer. Thank you. And then here, the kind of a variation, the most one of the most important part is the second violinist. Second violinist, can you play your part, please?
2-3.
Okay, with the first violinist. And. Thank you. And then everybody else? Okay, first variation. And. Thank you. And then the second variation is like this, with the walking bass. Listen to the basses. Cellos and bass. 2 and 3. Thank you. So I'm going to give you, if you can just keep that in mind, so we're going to go through, once again, the Sarabande, first variation, second variation. A lot of times this gets repeated so that we can hear again, so we can just be, this is what it is. Because we have to remember, back in the old days, you know, they didn't have the, like a record player or anything. So once you play it, that's it. You know, that's your live music and that's it. It's like going to a concert and there's no YouTube or, you know, anything to continue to listen for. There's no radio in the coach. So, you know, basically, a lot of times the thing gets played and this first time they're hearing it, and then it gets repeated. And that's why there are repeats for these dances and a lot of these other pieces as well. So, however, we're going to play this time without repeats. Okay, we're going to go theme, first variation, second variation. Okay? And then at the end, so that we remember what it was, what they call da capo, meaning after playing the beginning, first variation, second variation, and then you come all the way back and play the beginning once again, just so that we remember what the original thing was all about. Here is Sarabande in its entirety.
Thank you.
earlier music is actually has some, there's some, did you know that there's, at least this is my my thinking, there's an estimation about, there's a relationship between rap music and early, early music. Meaning, before choir music, they used to have Gregorian chants, like, Kyrie eleison, and just like that. And then after that, it became much more about text-driven. So he was trying to, the music is, was there to serve the text, and with up and down, up and down. And not many, you know, leaps of the notes. So very similar to kind of rapping these days. I mean, it may not be like note-driven, but it's all about the cadences and how the words, and it's actually, it's about explaining the story. And that's what basically a lot of the Gregorian chants were. Now, in the early days also, again, it started with vocal music. And then it became much more instrumental. And then the instruments, which used to be not so much of like the first go-to, they started mimicking vocal, the musical literature. And then all of a sudden, almost like the instruments kind of became morphed into voices and vice versa. And then of course, I think that kind of gives way to later on instruments and all of a sudden getting choirs again, like Beethoven 9th Symphony. Early music also, like Handel, is very much founded on the bass, the bass line. They called it the basso continuo. So everything is, the bass line gets written first, just like when you look at band charts, you have chords with some bass notes going through. It kind of gives you where the harmony is going, and then the players can kind of make things up and then, you know, read through whatever is on the chart. So in this case, if you can just play cellos and basses, and if you can just play the beginning of the Sarabande one more time, that'd be great. Here we go. One, two, three. Thank you. And then there is a, you know, combination of like who plays that. So used to be cellos or maybe cello and a bass, because, you know, they didn't have a huge auditorium back then, right? Probably the largest space in the community was the church. And churches didn't necessarily have huge places for musicians to play huge music. So either that or they have little concert halls, private concert halls for the aristocrats. So what they ended up, so orchestra and everything was much, much smaller. In addition to cello and bass, what they decided to do was, let's color that up a little bit more. So they added harpsichord. They also added organ. Because the organ and harpsichord then start, they can play chords instead of just one note. In addition to that, there is another instrument that was used even prior to organ and harpsichord. Anybody care to guess what might have accompanied cello and a bass? Lute, guitar. They call it either lute, like old Baroque guitar, or theorbo, which is like a fancy looking, a huge guitar. And we actually don't have the lute or the theorbo today. However, we have a guitarist. So, Calvin, can you stand? And that, the instrument that he's holding is circa 2024 Yamaha guitar, from what I hear. And so, although you probably are like, well, I didn't hear anything. Well, unfortunately, yeah, because not only he's back there, but also because although he's playing, again, you know, in the early days, we didn't have a full orchestra like this. So, Calvin, can you just play the first couple measures, your chords? Okay, thank you. And then so, you know, if that, and then coupled with like one small cello and then bass, usually then you could actually hear the guitar as well. So that's what you call a continuo group. Now, we're going to speed over to 20th century. Next piece we're going to play, and this is with their orchestra, by the way, and the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra members, just as we did with the first piece, is an arrangement of Simple Gifts, and most famous for... made famous, really, by Aaron Copland, who used it during his ballet music, Appalachian Spring. And I'm sure you'll hear it when you'll notice it when you hear it. So this is actually a choral arrangement that I ended up transcribing it to orchestra. Now, Some of you may know that I actually have been working with the new head of school here at Thayer, and I'm one of the scholars in residence here. And they really wanted to do more with the music program and revive the choral and orchestral music program here. So I've been working with them this year in its infancy. But with that came myriad of instruments. We had pianos, lots of pianos. We had cello. We had guitar. We had, you know, singers, we had violin, we had viola, and then we had saxophone, baritone saxophone. And so it started going on and on. So this is what I call post-apocalyptic orchestration. Because, and this is what I'm, and this I'm not, you know, this is actually not necessarily a joke, because when you look at the pieces that was written, especially after World War I or during World War I, that's exactly what you find. You find the strangest instrumentation. You see Stravinsky's music, and same thing, World War II, but especially during World War I, you find even more. Because not only was it such a devastating time for everybody in Europe, but they still wanted to play music, except either people are getting injured or getting killed, or they were getting shipped out to war. And they wanted to do something, and so all of a sudden, okay, let's do something. And then the composer would write something and have one violin, one flute, two pianos, you know, percussion, maybe even organ. So you have all this kind of a crazy combination. So today it's not to that effect. But so this is the Simple Gifts played by Thayer Orchestra and Atlantic Symphony.
Special guest, which is our Braintree High School orchestra. Theater orchestra members, can you guys switch seats? Go back into the section, and just anybody just come up, please. Okay.
And they are swapping some things around here at the Atlantic Symphony. We are going to take a 10-second break for station identification, and then we'll come back to the orchestra.
This is the Talking Information Center. WVBF Middleborough, WRSLP Pittsfield, WLLO Londonderry, WVAOLP Athol.
And I work with their late choral director many a times, and then also work with the band and orchestra there too. But it's been a while since I've been back, and then when we made the connection this year, I realized they have not a new person. I think she's been here for about how many years? Eight? Yeah. 9 years. And then she actually made me feel very old because she said, oh, you probably don't remember me, but I actually played in your youth orchestra when you were the music director of Empire State Youth Orchestra. And so that was 5 years ago. So anyway... her name is Cassie Subaran, and I'd like to just welcome her as a representative of the as a leader of this wonderful orchestra, and I'd like to just maybe have her say hello and also share with you what we're going to be playing.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having us. I didn't know I had to speak, and I hate public speaking, so it's going to be really quick. We're going to play a piece called Ancient Wonder Suite. We did this on our December concert. We also have a few students from Conservatory Lab Charter School joining us. My husband teaches there. They actually programmed the same piece without my husband and I even talking about it, so great minds think alike. We're going to do the first, third, and fourth movement. This piece talks about the seven ancient wonders of the world. Obviously, there's only four movements, so we're doing three of them. Is that enough?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Cassie. Yeah, it always amazes me, people who say they really don't like speaking in public, and yet they speak so well. So thank you so much. So we have the three movements. The first movement is called, this is once again, it's Ancient Wonder Suite. First one is Temple of Artemis at Ephesus. And then the second one, it's called the Great Pyramid of Gaza, obviously. So you know what that is. And then the last movement we're going to be doing is Statue of Zeus at Olympia. Okay, and so those will be three movements we'll be playing. And for those of you who have really not been to orchestra concerts, and I think most of you probably have, including all the parents and the friends who are joining us that are associated with the students, the way the string section, and this is written for string orchestra plus timpani, and timpani actually is a percussion instrument. And can you raise your hand, timpanist? Okay. And can you play something on the timpani? And can you play the other drum? Other drum? Okay. So the big thing about that being such a special percussion instrument is because it's pitched. It actually has a pitch. It's not just the sound. You actually you can adjust the pitches. And then you have the strings. They're seated somewhat differently depending upon what orchestras you're in. But usually, and almost always, first violins are, can you raise your bows? First violins, where are you? Okay, and I don't know how they got marooned over there, but, so can you maybe swing over to the next stand over? Okay. Thank you. And then second violins? Okay? And then, now, this is where things differ, actually. And same thing with violas, too. In the olden days, first violins used to be there, and a lot of times second violins would be here, because it would kind of provide a stereo effect. And then soon thereafter, especially during the recording era, when we had early days of recording era, to make much more of a blended sound, that's when a lot of the orchestras ended up having the first and second violins sit together this way. So it sounded much better from the recording. These days, first and second violins are usually this way. Violas are either what we call outside, which is closest to the audience, or over here. Our orchestra, the violas sit here. It gives more independence, and actually you can, although their F-holes are facing that way, that's where the sound's coming out, actually, still, you can hear them better. And then also the cellos right here. Cellos, can you raise your hands? Okay, thank you. Those are bows. Thank you. So that's what I meant. So they know. So this is, you know, it's the beauty of telecommunication or whatever you call it. So the cellos are the bass instrument, and then you have the basses. Basses over there, you see. Okay, and then that's pretty much it. So without further ado, the three movements from Ancient Wondersuite. Thank you.
And again, we're coming to you live from Thera Academy in Braintree, Massachusetts. I'm John Shea with the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra. It's their Masterworks After Hours concert. They're just getting ready for the next performers to come on to the stage. I believe it's just going to be the Atlantic Symphony for the remainder of the concert. Let's go back to the stage with conductor Jin Kim.
We're playing one piece, a movement from, again, another suite this time. Nothing to do with France, nothing to do with courts, at least except for the brief period in his life. Johann Sebastian Bach, he actually wrote an orchestral suite. He wrote... And this is, again, you have to wonder, you know, one of the things that, again, that kind of, I didn't really think about it because such a, it was when we were studying and performing, you know, everybody knows about these suites, they know about the partitas and, you know, for the solo violins and also for piano, preludes and fugues, which for those of you who have played, you know, piano and learned piano, I'm sure you've played some, you know, at least one of those. And then, remember, Bach, he also wrote this gargantuan piece called B minor Mass. Have you guys heard of that? Yeah, this is one is considered like one of his, like, you know, magnum opus. In addition to a lot of his passions, St. John Passion, and also St. Matthew Passion. Now, I really didn't think twice until one day I just thought of something. I'm like, you know, wait a minute, this sounds really weird. Because do you know what religion Bach was? He was Lutheran. So why would a Lutheran write a mass? And especially a gargantuan mass at that, because it just makes no sense. He wrote it so he could try to get a job with one of the aristocratic courts. And just as I mentioned to you, it's a mass. So all the serious composers who wanted to be known and wanted to be taken seriously were writing masses. And at this point, and this is toward, you know, his, as he was getting on the top of his career, he actually wrote the Kyrie and Gloria, and it's expansive, even just those two movements, because they're all split up into other smaller movements, and actually presented to one of the kings and said, here's my work. And the reason it's such an amazing work is because it actually, you can tell, his mass setting, he's basically throwing everything out there, showing, this is his resume. He's showing, I can write fugues, I can write old style, I can write new style, I can also write like operas, I can also do solos, I can also do just like everything. And so that's why B minor mass is considered like the quintessential magnum opus. Because it really, it's like a show-off piece for himself. It was never meant to be played liturgically, but again, back then, now the masses were no longer was becoming just strictly, you know, catered to churches, but again, it was becoming a genre unto itself. So we have the Johann Sebastian Bach. He was married twice. The first wife died young, and so there was one very famous composer that came out of the first wife, and his name is Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, CPE Bach. And the other, the second wife, who I believe, actually, I'm trying to think, I think the second wife was his cousin. But anyway, with her, he had a few kids, and then the most famous composer was Johann Christian Bach, J.C. Bach. So you're going to be actually hearing Johann Sebastian Bach in its glorious Baroque era, and then J.C. Bach. Now we're veering into the Mozart and the Haydn and the classical era. So as we're transitioning from the elder Bach, the Baroque period, where there are lots of notes and lots of, like, you know, if you look at Baroque furniture, they have all kinds of, like, you know, little ornaments there, and it's very flashy and ornate. Whereas the what they call pre-classical, or for that matter, classical music, became more about simplicity. You know, proportion, simplicity, and no ornaments so much, except for a little bit here and there. And so you're going to really hear that. So I'm just going to have the orchestra play the beginning of the two pieces that we're about to play back-to-back, and to kind of give you what I mean by how it's so different. So this is the introduction to the first movement of and which is written into the first movement of the Orchestral Suite Number 1 by Johann Sebastian Bach, J.S. Bach. Very similar to Sarabande, the Handel. I mean, you know, it's got a little more notes, but then again, it has the same kind of a sensibility. Now, after this introduction, the middle part is very fast and is fugal, meaning it's written for like imitative entrances, meaning, you know, row, row, row your boat, row, row, row your boat, and it keeps bouncing around depending upon various sections. So this is how he takes the melody and makes it into a fugue. Orchestra. So how many entrants did you hear? How many row, row, row your boats? Four? How many heard four? How many heard three? There are four. So there are four. Okay? And now, we'll play it once more. Let's see if you can listen to it. And I'm literally turning to who's playing those entrances. And I'm going to ask the orchestra to, when you don't have the subject, when the other entrance comes in, play softer. Okay? Other parts. So we can really hear the entrances. That is the Orchestral Suite Number 1, the beginning, overture. Now, overture in itself, actually, that term was mostly used for the beginning of operas, and then also oratorios. Now, oratorios and operas, the difference is one's staged and the other isn't. Handel's Messiah is an oratorio, whereas, you know, Barbara of Seville is an opera, right? And so back in Bach days, especially with Handel, he wrote lots of operas. I know most of us know Handel mostly as our, you know, the oratorio guy, you know, especially with the Handel Messiah. He actually wrote a lot of operas. Now, with that, Baroque music, so there was, while Johann Sebastian Bach was doing his Baroque music and church music and all this, and while getting every manuscript he can get his hands on to see what other people are doing in continental Europe and in England. And then, at the same time in Italy, there was this proliferation of, you know, opera music. And then you have the suites and the court music coming from France as well, and all the suites. So this is a combination. So again, why would a Lutheran church musician write an orchestral overture? It makes no sense. Because again, he was so interested in writing for various genres, and he was learning while he was composing, and was also providing service. Because at this time, when he actually wrote the orchestral suite, this is one of his happiest times. Because he actually wasn't a church musician at that point. He actually was working for an aristocrat, a prince who adored music. And he had the best players that he could get his hands on. And he just like had the, you know, it's like having a Ferrari to drive, right? And work with. But that didn't last long, because after he passed away, his son had no interest in music, so he got fired. So, and then soon thereafter, he ended up getting his job, which he stayed for many decades at the St. Thomas Church in Leipzig. So with that, now J.C. Bach is more of the Handel and Italian tradition. So although his dad was this Lutheran, big powerhouse Lutheran-based, kind of still worldly and continental composer, his music was much more geared toward the new music, the pre-classical, simplified, with little ornamentations here and there, but just not so ornate, not so many, you know, various, you know, entrances of fugues of this voice and getting things repeated over and over again. And so this is what the beginning of his opera overture, La Calamita di Cuori, sounds like. So very different. One of the things interesting, I think, first violins, can you just play the very beginning? This is actually just, you know, obviously this doesn't sound very Baroque, but it is a melody. Ready? Here we go. Thank you. And then let's add the violas and cellos and bass to that. And thank you. So you'll notice that the first violins, cellos and basses are basically playing the same rhythm, at least, right? Same as the melody. And did you notice what the violas were doing? Violas, can you play? And okay, thank you. So this is sometimes why the violas get the bad rap, because they sometimes may not have the best, you know, melody or the best part. However, this is, there's a reason I'm pointing this out, not to make them feel bad, because I know they don't feel bad, because I know they love their instruments, and I also love viola. It's because Beethoven decides this is very important, and I'll tell you why later. Okay? Because you actually go, yep, yeah, pa, 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 same thing. It's like paint drying on the wall. It's like, okay, I get the point. But actually, without this, this is what it sounds like. So without viola, this is what it sounds like. And No seconds. And okay, now with the violas. And violas, play louder. Okay, good, good. And then I'm going to ask the violas to do it this way. Yum, pum, 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 pum. So now we're moving together, and do you see how that just repeated note adds to that kind of a excitement? Now, what's amazing about this piece is all of a sudden you get peasant fiddling happening. Okay, and because the second violin sounds like this. Okay, so this is, I remember, you know, going to the Snug in Hingham, and this is what happens at the Irish bar. So with that, and then the violas, and then everybody else. So this is, and for the students, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So here we go. Ready? Listen to the seconds. Thank you. So, that's how it's different. Now, the La Calamita de Cuore, the reason I programmed it is because it's not just your like regular garden variety overture where you have a beginning is like a slow introduction and then there's a fast part and then a very small what they call development part where you actually take that information and then like we did in the variation of Sarabande and play a little bit of just, you know, maybe a little sidetrack and then come back and play what was played at the very beginning of the fast section. This is a very peculiar overture because it starts with, right away with the melody. Okay, this is not an introduction. And then you're going to hear the second theme, and then you actually all of a sudden it stops, and then slow music comes in as though it's like a small mini book. So just like almost like a symphony, you got the fast part, slow part, and then fast part, except the fast part is not the reiteration of what you just heard at the beginning. It's something completely different. And even more exciting. So, without further ado, dad and son Bach, back to back. And if you can, just let's withhold our applause until end of J.C. Bach. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's sort of a mini symphony,
I call it, right? Because it really is, for an overture, it's just got two structured of three very distinct movements blending into one. But as you can also see, J.C. Bach is now really working with, again, sort of what a lot of the composers have been doing, which is no longer about, you know, follow where the row your boat is, but actually all of a sudden, you know, getting loud and all of a sudden getting very soft. And then you have, you know, violins go da-da-da-da, and then also with everybody's da-da-da, like what they call rocket themes happening. And then just very different kind of music. Now, with that, I'm going to give a little introduction to Beethoven. Now, Beethoven, unlike, thank goodness, Brahms, who actually, about the same time, actually, when you think about it, when they started writing symphonies, Beethoven started writing this, you know, it is in his early work, so in his 20s. Brahms did the same thing decades later, except he didn't finish his first symphony until he was 40 years old because of Beethoven. Because he thought by then Mozart and Haydn has firmly cemented, now the idiom and the genre that you want to write for to be taken seriously as a composer is no longer masses. It's symphonies. You got to write symphonies. Now, symphonies came out of basically the opera pit. The operas became such a popular idiom, except the orchestra basically was doing accompaniment. And then more composers started writing, you know what, why can't we just, you know, and then you begin the opera with the orchestra playing, and usually their job is to say, music's beginning, please sit down, stop, or at least stop chewing with your mouth open, and then just, you know, just please be ready. Because literally, they were eating while this was happening too. So, you know, that's why at the beginning of the overture, you have these, like, you know, cannon shots, like, boom, big chord, book, big chord, to just say, we're beginning, right? And then that served as what we would call the overture, very short. And then after a while, as things were getting more and more advanced and, you know, more and more notes and more improvements happening on stage, composers also thought, you know what, you know, they're not just there to accompany singers. Let's start writing more, like, interesting parts for them. And now they really couldn't compete with the singers, and you don't want to do that. You don't want to make divas, you know, not very happy. So what you want to do is then write a more expansive overture, right? And that's what you hear in J.C. Bach's overture. And then as the overture starts getting more and more complicated, a little longer and more dense with musical ideas, after a while they said, you know what? You know, in addition to the singers, the orchestra does very well too. So why can't we just have a concert without the singers and just the orchestra? So the people who are sitting down here playing, accompanying, got on stage. Hence, the orchestra concerts. And no longer the singers are on stage. Basically, instrumentalists took them over. And then now, you know, it's happening with both, you know, singers and at the same time. You know, this is coexisting at the same time. So, with that said, therefore, the overtures a lot of times were even called sinfonia or symphony. And then after a while, that's how the symphonic genre really took hold. So after Haydn and Mozart made it a point of making sonata form, which is actually one of the ways of organizing symphonies in movements, symphonies became the number one go-to for serious composers. Beethoven, obviously, had to put a bit on it as well. So he's saying, I'm going to try this one. So this is his first symphony. The reason Brahms took forever to write it is because he was so, like, taken by the Beethoven symphonies, thinking, what else is there to write? Because Beethoven just blew up that entire genre to where no one has thought was possible. And it was just an amazing array of musical ideas and revolutionary things that he ended up doing. So Brahms just got paralyzed. And then finally, in his 40s, he finally finished his first symphony. Thankfully, his second symphony came the year after. So, and, you know, we have four symphonies by him. Now, Beethoven also wrote 9, as you know, and this is number 1, and this is how it begins.
And that's
exactly what the critics said. They said, what?
was that? That's not a beginning. It's like some flippant, like literally flippant. And do you notice why it makes it so weird? Why it sounds so weird? Because, do you know what the strings are doing? So this is what the winds are doing. So other than kind of a short note, I mean, they played. This is what the strings are doing. Yeah, I rest my case. So, I mean, no wonder people are saying, what? What happened? I mean, we've heard some, you know, adventurous things that Mozart and especially Haydn has done was really out of the box, but this is like beyond out of the box. And not only does the symphony start with the rinkety, like little pizzicato, although it is not that, it's like boom, bum. And then you have, and it's like, well, okay, then this is not a chord, like as in like, you know, we've arrived, we're going to begin the symphony. And so where is this going to go? Well, let's find out. Except when we get to that chord, first of all, that's a wrong chord. Now, there's no such thing as wrong chord, but it's, the reason I say it's wrong chord is because this is in C major, but the first big chord that's played with everybody is a G major chord, which is the furthest away from C major. So if you look at the keyboard on a piano, like C to C, G is right in the middle. And the way classical music a lot of times is written, tonal music, is the tension between the root, the C, and the G. First degree and the fifth degree. And in this case, all of a sudden, the big chord is the fifth, which is like everybody's feeling like, what is happening? Now, I'm not going to play the entire introduction, because after that, it doesn't settle down. And you don't know where it's going. And the reason for that is not only because harmonically, we've just went from the bass chord, the C major, to all of a sudden, you know, within a few measures, where the big chord is a, you know, fifth, which is the farthest away, you really can't figure out where the melody is. Because just when you think it was a melody, it really isn't. And then, just when you thought introduction was strange enough, and actually toward the end of the introduction, things kind of calm down and gets blended together, as fragmented as they may be, the beginning of what they call exposition, the main theme, is like this. Okay, so, you know, kind of a boppy little tune. Okay, a first violinist, can you just play yours? Thank you. So it's interesting, right? Now listen to the second violinist.
Just play from the down.
So they could have, actually, he could have written it if they played together. And what's interesting is now everybody played together. You're going to hear, it's nothing more than a suspension of da, da, da-di-da, da-di-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da. It's just repeating the same note with da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. That's the end. Da-da-da-da comes from this idea. So this whole idea of what we call the motivic development, instead of having melody, instead of having actually even harmony drive anything, he's actually taking a cell of something, and he's actually, this is what we call, what I call the, in the 20th century music they called minimalism, where you play the same note over and over and over again, except you start getting slower, slightly, and then maybe slightly faster, and then with more people joining in, except this is all the same, so they call the minimalistic, just like minimalistic painting and whatnot. So, same thing here. So you basically are saying C, 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 C. Okay, here we go, beginning. Now we move down to D. Now where's it gonna go? B. D again. Oh, F.
a C major. We finally come home. Except it's the end of the phrase. And at the same time, it's the beginning of this kind of a bridge work. So it's really amazing what he does. And, you know, you can tell a lot about the composer about what the blueprint's going to be at the very beginning. And what makes Beethoven that much special is because a lot of the greatest composers, even to this day, they put so much of their work, and you can see their blueprint in the very beginning of the first movement, or at least the big bulk of the first movement. And then a lot of times those ideas are then taken and developed, or as used as a base as a second movement, or as a contrary to a second movement, third movement, or fourth movement. Except, just like we all work on a deadline, a lot of the symphonies, by the time you got to the fourth movement, there isn't that much musical substance. Because you're on a deadline. You have to get this done. And so, and also fourth movement usually is not like a very musically complicated movement until you get to people like Brahms and whatnot. But it just became more of like, you know, it's done, all the work is done, let's just enjoy and do the fourth movement, which is fast, and then, you know, give audience what they want, and also just, you know, have them just be the musician, have the musicians happy as well. Beethoven, from start to finish, it's just dense with information. And not only that, it's not just the information, but the way he's able to morph them and to connect them at the same time, put them against each other, is just absolutely amazing. Give you a little taste, and we'll play from beginning to the end. The second movement is homage to old music, Bach. Row, row, row your boat. I mean, not that melody, okay? Second violin begins the melody. Violas and cellos. Bass. Very Bach. Very Bach. Okay? And third movement is a dance movement. And which is, has been the case with Handel and, Haydn and Mozart. It's a dance movement from a suite. Very popular one, minuet.
We'll make it a little bit faster.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe not that fast. Okay. Yeah. Now that actually yum bum 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 ba da dum bum bum ba da da da, that's kind of a minuet feel to it. But however, this is not, I mean, are you gonna be able to dance to this? Bum 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 bum. Everything seems to be going up and up and up. Not only is Beethoven writing something kind of peculiar for minuet, he actually has this tempo marking very fast. And then it gets repeated. Okay. They didn't know I was going to stop or go on. So anyway, thank you for stopping. And it gets repeated because a lot of the dance suites, it gets repeated. Because again, if you're dancing, you want to get used to the music and then you know what's happening. 8 bars of this, 8 bars of that, and so on and so forth. So you're going to hear that as the main theme. And then toward the end of the minuet, they call it trio, which is usually slightly slower tempo, but something very different and usually geared more toward highlighting the woodwind instruments instead of the strings. And then at the end, just like we did for the Sarabande Handel, we play the beginning all over again, da capo. So we start this, and then we go into a slower section with more winds, and then we come back, except we don't do repeats, and then we just go right on and just play the beginning part once again to kind of refresh our memory. Last movement starts like a regular beginning of the regular symphony. Okay? This is how it begins. Except it's just one note, various, you know, octaves. It's not a chord. Again, just when you think, bum and thumb, yum bum ba dum bum bum, and tra dum bum bum bum, or something like that. You know, if this is what I'm just imagining some garden variety composer might have done. Okay? Except he doesn't do that here. Thank you.
and I'm going to leave you hanging. Because that's when the main theme comes in. Very innovative from First Symphony. Was this well received? No. No, this was like, they didn't like react violently to it, but then again, this did not make the front page of the music digest. It was just like, well, that's very peculiar. It's like, who is this guy? It's like, and by then he wrote the Second Symphony, and they started writing a bunch of other music. So, I hope, thank you so much for coming tonight, and I wanted to, just wanted to thank everybody for being just joining in this great festivity, not only with the orchestra members of Atlantic Symphony, but also for the student musicians and all the students. Actually, student musicians, can you all stand up and let's give them a big round of applause? Thank you. The program is in its infancy, but we have been just making great inroads. I'm so very much looking forward to working with the school here to really revive just the crux of the both orchestral and choral part of this music department. And then, of course, KSS Subaran and Braintree High School Orchestra. Stand, please. Where are you? Oh, they were all sitting in the way back.
We're just going to pause real quick because station identification.
All right. Well, thank you so much
for
coming.
This is the Talking Information Center. WBBF Middleborough, WRSLP Pittsfield, WLLO Londonderry, WBAOLP Athol.
In the coming seasons, and this is our first season, and you just had your front row seats, too, because, I mean, there are really no bad seats in this house, for the first symphony by Beethoven. You've already heard Fifth in the opening night, but this is your in for a treat. And please open your mind and just really enjoy this wonderful ride together. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I believe that's going to wrap up our broadcast for this evening. Coming to you from Thayer Academy in Braintree, the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra Masterworks After Hours Concert. A big thank you to Billy Walker back at the radio station for keeping us on the air, sounding great tonight. Our executive director, Jacqueline Porro, our office assistant, Liz Collins, Julie Cockrum, our program director, Lorraine Vitelli, an office assistant as well. I'm John Shea. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to send things back to regular programming here on the Talking Information Center.